From the opinion pages of the Wall Street Journal, this is Potomac Watch.
Ron DeSantis formally declares the start of his campaign for president, long awaited, and using the unconventional approach of Twitter, which broke down, as it happened, before the Florida governor could give his remarks for 20 minutes or so. But glitches aside, how formidable is the Florida governor's message, and what chances does he have of defeating Donald Trump? Welcome. I'm Paul Gigot, editor of the editorial page of the Wall Street Journal. I'm here with two of my colleagues, Kim Strassel and Kyle Peterson, both DeSantis watchers, presidential campaign watchers. So the launch glitch was embarrassing in the sense that if you want to launch a presidential campaign, you'd prefer not to have it interrupted with a breakdown of what's supposed to be a new and innovative way to announce. And he lost some followers of people who dropped off the event. But my own view, Kim, is that this is not going to matter much to the race in the long term. Voters won't remember it much or care. The press is fixated on it this morning. In the end, they'll care about what DeSantis says and how he presents himself as a candidate.
I agree with you. Look, the press is fixated on it because Twitter is the home to the press. And that was one question you might have asked about DeSantis' decision to use this as his forum for his launch. I can see the rationale in certain ways. It's unconventional, but it's in some ways a way to troll Donald Trump, given that he was so ubiquitous on that platform prior to getting kicked off of it. Maybe it shows that DeSantis is a modern guy in contrast to some of the older entrants into this race. The problem is that Twitter Spaces is notoriously unreliable. And obviously, the press was all going to pile on if anything went wrong, which it inevitably did. But I'm with you. I think this is immediately forgettable. It probably would have helped him to have had a smoother rollout in terms of maybe instant fundraising and donors. But in terms of the long haul and this campaign, what's going to matter more is what he says and what his message is.
All right, let's listen to his campaign pitch and what his themes are.
Truth must be our foundation, and common sense can no longer be an uncommon virtue. In Florida, we proved that it can be done. We chose facts over fear, education over indoctrination, law and order over rioting and disorder. We held the line when freedom hung in the balance. We showed that we can and must revitalize America. We need the courage to lead and the strength to win. I'm Ron DeSantis, and I'm running for president to lead our great American comeback.
All right, Kyle Peterson, common sense, normalcy, sanity. Great American comeback. An implicit criticism there, both, I think, of Donald Trump and Joe Biden, and basically saying we're going to restore kind of common sense leadership after the chaotic divisiveness of recent years. What do you make of the message?
I think it's a reasonable message for him out of the gate. I think people are going to want more details on what he means. I mean, every politician says everything that they want to do is common sense. But there, then, I think Ron DeSantis pivots to the Florida record, and the motto might be Make America Florida Again. And he has a very long list of things, even just in this past legislative session, that he has passed that I think will be very attractive to Republican and conservative voters. And some of this stuff people have heard about, Disney and so forth, but some of it they maybe have not. You know, ensuring that state investments are based on maximizing returns, not on any sort of environmental or social criteria, changing the rules for public workers, most of them at least, so that they have to directly pay union dues if they're a member of a union, that the union can't take that out of their paychecks, crime, tort reform. I mean, the list goes on. And I think that that is his strongest suit is saying, as he did in that Twitter Spaces interview and as he has before, you know, there's a reason that Florida is number one in where other Americans are moving. And so I think that that was a pretty decent message as a first 30,000 foot rollout, that the clip that was played. And then he will just have to take it to Iowans and explain what he really means by that.
Yeah, I mean, I would not make the theme Make America Like Florida, because I don't think you want to be that specific, saying we want to turn it into Florida. He has to broaden that message. But Florida success is clearly going to be a crucial part of his message, particularly contrasted with Trump, Kim, because what he's trying to say is, in part, look, I got things done. Trump, for all of his rhetorical flair, often got in his own way, often failed to deliver on what he promised. And you're beginning to see some of that criticism of Trump even appear now, saying, for example, that he didn't really secure the border, for example, and criticizing him for spending. And then I think the freedom message is implicitly also about COVID and how he handled COVID and opening the schools in 2020, for example, despite being sued by the teachers' unions. He won that lawsuit. Keeping the economy open, one of the first governors to reopen the economy after the early lockdowns. And in contrast to Trump, and I think you're going to hear who supported lockdowns much longer, and remember had that memorable fight with Brian Kemp, the governor of Georgia, who wanted to open up and Trump told him not to. I think you're going to hear an awful lot about that contrast, and you're going to hear an awful lot about Anthony Fauci, who Trump kept on the job right through the end of his term. And in fact, you'll hear Ron DeSantis say that Donald Trump even gave an award to Anthony Fauci. And in contrast, I dug into the data myself. I made the proper trade-offs between the risks of COVID and ill health and the larger costs of lockdowns and shutdowns and tried to strike a better balance.
That's right. The importance of all of those Florida reforms is not so much the individual ones, because often what governors do at a state level are not what you replicate, obviously, as president. The point of them, of highlighting them, is to show Ron DeSantis's leadership, his governance abilities, his ability to get things finished. And that was the message I very much heard, as not just in the Twitter spaces, but he did a number of other media interviews following it, more conventional on Fox. He did one with Mark Levin on radio, different print journalists. The message there, and if I would paraphrase, is Donald Trump made a lot of big promises. Many of them are great, many of which I agree with, but he was really awful when it came to executing them. Look at me. I'm the sort of person who can get that done. This is why I'm a winner, why I win re-election with 19 points, and instead why the Republican Party under Donald Trump's leadership is engaged in, and the words DeSantis uses specifically, is a culture of losing. So he's going to highlight not just COVID, and that's a very big one, I agree with you, but he's also going to talk about his leadership in other times of crisis, which obviously is the real test of governance. That would include, for instance, his management of the hurricanes in Florida. He got some pretty wild reviews for those. And remember that the election came just not long after that. I myself have long believed that part of the margin of his reelection victory was, in fact, a lot of Floridians who were simply grateful that there was a governor there who managed to get the state back up and running within days of a very devastating event. So this is going to be, I think, front and center of his complaints against Donald Trump, his attack on Donald Trump, that as well as striving very hard, and you see this in everything he does, to present as a kind of low drama figure, which is also designed to be a contrast to a president who attracts a lot of outside attention, and there seems to be drama surrounding Donald Trump with everything he does.
Let's listen to one of the clips with Trey Gowdy on the culture wars.
The woke mind virus is basically a form of cultural Marxism. At the end of the day, it's an attack on the truth. And because it's a war on truth, I think we have no choice but to wage a war on woke. So how does that work for a president? Some of it may be the bully pulpit, being willing to tell the truth and not being deluded by ideology, which we see in many aspects of our society.
Kyle, in many ways, that's vintage DeSantis. He's a brawler in the culture wars. And part of his selling point is, I won't back down. The left comes up with these ideas that want to change fundamentally American society. I will resist. I will fight back. That is part of his sales pitch. What do you think of it as a vote getter? Because Trump is a cultural brawler, too. Is that too much playing into Trump's strength, or does he have to do that to show comparable strength?
I think he needs to do some of that and pair it again, as Kim was talking about, with discussion of how he's the guy who actually knows where the levers of power are and can execute them. I mean, in Florida, the state legislature signed by the governor has banned sort of DEI, diversity, equity, inclusion offices in state institutions. And on this Twitter Spaces conversation, he said all these education institutions have to get accredited. And ultimately, some of that power flows up to the U.S. Department of Education. And so maybe there's something that a president, if he wanted to, could do to pull that accreditation lever and tamp down on this stuff and go back to old school principles of equality and treating everyone the same and judging people by the content of their character. And so I think that that was effective. I mean, I think he needs to be careful on this as well as in other subjects. The investigation into the vaccine makers that are happening in Florida is another example of not going too far where you're doing something that might be really popular among Republican primary voters and then pretty unpopular in a general election if he gets the nomination, giving President Biden the kind of ammunition to put a dent in his credibility in some of these swing states if we get to November 2024 with Ron DeSantis on the ticket.
All right, we're going to take a break. And when we come back, more on Ron DeSantis versus Donald Trump and why the Florida governor and his staff think that they can wrest the nomination from Donald Trump when we come back.
Your Money Briefing will explore what you need to know to become a homeowner and how to sustain your home by learning ways to manage the costs from unexpected expenses.
You're basically always in a state of checking. You're always keeping your eye open for anything that could be going wrong with your house. Your house is a complicated machine. It has a lot of systems and components in it, and those systems and components are getting older. They're wearing out.
You can get early access to our series, Buying a Home and Keeping It, on WSJ Special Access. Only for WSJ subscribers.
Don't forget, you can reach the latest episode of Potomac Watch anytime. Just ask your smart speaker, play the Opinion Potomac Watch podcast. That is, play the Opinion Potomac Watch podcast.
From the opinion pages of the Wall Street Journal, this is Potomac Watch.
Welcome back. I'm Paul Gigot, The Wall Street Journal, with Kim Strassel and Kyle Peterson. There's no question that Donald Trump thinks Ron DeSantis is the biggest threat to his chances of winning the nomination again. He's spent the last 5 months trying to deter him from getting the nomination, attacking him for all kinds of things, real and imagined, and yet he didn't take him out. DeSantis is now in. And nonetheless, Trump did obviously hurt DeSantis in head-to-head polling. DeSantis was a lot closer than he is now. The latest Real Clear Politics average in the polls has Trump at something like 56% among Republican primary voters, DeSantis at 19. DeSantis well ahead of any other contenders like Tim Scott, Nikki Haley, Vivek Ramaswamy, and Mike Pence, declared or undeclared, are all in the middle or lower single digits. But the damage in the head-to-head polling that Trump's criticism has done to DeSantis has given the press a reason to say that DeSantis almost has no chance to get the nomination. In my conversations with the DeSantis strategists, Kim, their view is that when they look at the polling, they say that, yes, it's been hurt in the head-to-head poll, but the governor's favorables have not been hurt by Trump, that they're still strong among Republican voters. And when they look at Trump's polling, take that 56%, they say, well, you know, but 25% of that are really solid Trump voters. They're not going anywhere. You know, he could shoot somebody on Fifth Avenue. They're going to vote for Trump. He could be indicted five times and they're going to vote for Trump. But that other group above 25%, and it might be 30% in some states, but other voters, they're looking for somebody else. They've rallied to Trump since Alvin Bragg's indictment, but they're gettable if a candidate can make the case. How do you see it?
Absolutely. I actually agree with that because, for the record, that's what we saw in 2016 as well. And we saw a big crowded field, and Donald Trump pretty consistently, at least toward the end, was getting about a third of primary voters, but he had a ceiling out there. And there were a lot of people who were looking for an alternative. And you could see that his support obviously coalesced after he won the nomination. And certainly in 2020, there was no primary, but obviously in terms of Republicans who went out to cast their vote for him. But fundamentally, now that there's a choice again, and given some of the problems Donald Trump has faced, especially since he left office, you definitely see that desire out there for Republicans for more choice. And, you know, one of the things I've been looking at, too, I'm not sure at this stage in the game so early on that some of these national head-to-head polls with very few people, many of whom are not tuned in yet, are necessarily hugely accurate. If you look at some of the polls that are being done of Iowa voters who are a little bit more tuned in, who are already starting to pay more attention because candidates are coming to visit them there, the spread between DeSantis and Trump is narrower. It's still there, but there's clearly a solid group of people who are already very interested in Ron DeSantis and that very first caucus state. And you add to this some of the things that DeSantis is also going to have in his favor. He has got quite a huge war chest of money. He's putting together a pretty formidable operation ground game in the early states, Iowa, New Hampshire, South Carolina. They are claiming that this is going to be a bigger volunteer operation and paid operation than even Bernie Sanders had back in the last primary. And that's a big deal because that's a lot of people. So there's going to be the message, the money, and I think indeed a desire from some Republicans to see what else is on offer.
Yeah, I agree with that. Trump, of course, and I think this is one of the paradoxes of our current moment in politics. The press corps agrees with Trump on this, that it's over. The nomination fight is all but over. Trump's got it wrapped. And I think the press corps and Trump, it's fascinating to watch, Kyle. They hate DeSantis, the mainstream media, and they're in league with Trump, not in any conspiratorial sense, but just by the fact that they share a desire for Trump to get the nomination. And they're going after DeSantis in a very big way. That's an obstacle he'll have to overcome. But I don't think this is over. And particularly when you look at the biggest fact in American politics right now is that you have us moving toward a 2024 campaign and election for the president with Joe Biden and Donald Trump, the leading candidates in the two parties. And a majority of the public says, that's a terrible idea. We don't want it. We want other choices. When that happens, I think there's going to be some surprises in this next year as the voters pay attention and say, do we really want what would be five more years of this kind of choice and this kind of warfare? I think there's an opening for somebody in both parties, frankly, to shake things up and make this a race.
That sure seems right to me. I mean, we may end up with that Trump-Biden matchup again, but if you think about where we are in the cycle, President Trump announced that he was running for office on June 16th, 2015. So that is still a month into the future from where we stand now in the current cycle. If you look at the polling in the 2016 race, at this point, it was Jeb Bush leading the pack with a whole bunch of other people at 8 or 9 or 10%. We're still a long way from these primaries. There's still potential for other candidates to get in if they want to. There's rumblings that maybe Glenn Youngkin, the governor of Virginia, is thinking about it again, depending on how the state legislative elections that are coming up here go. And there's a lot that can happen. So I take the point that even if we get more indictments, criminal indictments and charges and potential trials of President Trump, there are some of his voters who will not be bothered by that at all. And maybe we'll stick even closer to him because they think it is part of this persecution that he is facing. But there may be a lot of people also in the middle who would be persuaded that even if they think this stuff is baloney, that this is what four more years of Trump would bring, is this same constant chaos, these same distractions. And Ron DeSantis is already starting to nudge toward making that kind of argument. And so there may be Trump fans who, even though they remain Trump fans, are receptive of that. And the other thing that could happen is somebody's health could take a turn for the worse. And even if it is President Biden, I think that certainly shakes up the race on the Democratic side. And then it could also make people think, even if it's Biden who is having a health issue, well, you know, President Trump is not that much younger than President Biden. Do we really want to put ourselves in that same position again? And so I wouldn't write off even these candidates like Tim Scott that are floating in the low polling right now, because who knows? We're a long way from November 2024.
Well, yeah. I mean, obviously, campaigns matter and how candidates perform and how candidates hit the moment. That is, have they tapped into the certain public mood, and do their personas and their agenda tap into that mood in a way that gets people to move? I mean, in a way, the comparable situation that DeSantis faces now is the one that Barack Obama faced in 2008 when he challenged Hillary Clinton. Now, he got in early in the year before the election, but didn't make a lot of movement until later in the year when he gave that electric speech, I think this was November or December, in Iowa, which started to turn, and the Democrats and said, you know what, we don't want to go with a Clinton for another term. We want to try something new. And I think that there's the potential for that to happen on the Republican side, certainly this time. Now, if DeSantis doesn't perform, if he turns out to be too wooden, if he turns out not to be able to have the right policies that appeal to enough Republicans in this current Republican Party, he won't catch fire. And then, you know, maybe somebody else will. But I think there's that potential there. And I think press makes a mistake in writing him off.
A huge mistake. And look, we should be really happy that Republican voters are going to get this very wide field of very different voices and a choice, because you are going to see a lot of different approaches out there. You are already seeing them. Tim Scott's got much more of a kind of optimistic approach to the country, not as specific as we've talked about here on details and policies. Nikki Haley jumped in there very early on with that very interesting speech on abortion. They're going to get a lot of different ideas and approaches. That's something I'm actually excited to hear, especially as we move into the debates. Maybe a lot more policy detail on how people would lead, what their approach would be. And yeah, the gorilla in the room always is going to be Donald Trump. But there is this interest in some other voices and different people. And we're going to get a real debate out there. And this is still early days. One thing that's really great about primary campaigns is they are a hazing to see if you have what it takes to be president. It's the ultimate test. And so we're going to see some candidates fizzle out. We're going to see some rise to the challenge. Some may look very different a couple months from now than they might look now. That's just the nature of political campaigns. But again, I think the great news for Republican voters is that unlike on the Democratic side, they are getting a choice.
We're going to have a lot more to say as the days and weeks unfold about the contrast between Donald Trump and Ron DeSantis and the rest of the Republicans on policy issues. No need to go into those today. They will certainly unveil themselves as the days go on, and we can parse those. But I agree with you, Kim. I think it's going to be a debate that is interesting and worth having and seeing where the party can go. It's a pregnant moment for the Republican Party. They want to go with Trump. I think we know, having lived through that experience, what it's going to be like. But if they go with someone new, could be a whole new world and an interesting set of choices. All right. Thank you to Kim and Kyle. Thank you all for listening. We're back every day on Potomac Watch, and we hope you'll be here tomorrow with us as well. Thanks for listening.